Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I'm Alistair Beckett King.
And Alistair, this is, as people will be able to tell, a very respectful episode.
Somber.
Yes, somber.
Reverent.
Exactly.
James, have you got a reverent and respectful story for me there?
Well, this week, Alex.
Alex? Who's that?
Alex?
What?
What?
Outrageous that you'd get my name wrong at this point.
Well, it is the mystery of Cromwell's head. For no reason whatsoever.
So reverent.
Alistair.
James.
How does this period of national mourning, which we are in at the point of recording, find you?
The good news is I think we're still going to be in it by the time the podcast comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not short.
Is it 7 days after the funeral?
Is it? I only found out today that the funeral hasn't happened yet. James, I'm ready to be so respectful.
Thank goodness.
I am reining it in. I'm self-censoring like the right-wing comedians do all the time. What is it they want to say? We don't know. We'll never know. Because they're self-censoring. And that's what I'm doing.
Thank goodness. Beginning your lifetime of service there.
Yes.
I like that.
It's what she would have wanted. Me to shut up for a minute.
I really like how everyone has just become an expert on royal protocol.
Oh, yes. Instantly.
It's like the Olympics. 2 days into the Olympics, everyone knows all the rules of all the obscure sports.
Mm-hmm.
Bandying around terms like Operation Unicorn, like we knew that all along.
Excuse my ignorance. What is Operation Unicorn?
Well, Alistair, I need to first take you back to Operation London Bridge.
Falling down, is it?
London Bridge is down is the code for the Queen has died.
What's the code for something's happened to London Bridge?
I don't know.
Because it's a major London Bridge and were it to fall down, that would be serious.
It's like if you had a railway-based pyromaniac who was actually called Mr. Sands.
Yes! You have to know that Mr. Sands or Inspector Sands is the phrase people use in the tannoy in train stations in the underground to indicate that there is a fire.
Yes.
Without panicking people. The only problem being that everybody knows that. So if you hear Inspector Sands, you're like, oh, fire.
Oh, well, there's a fire here.
Well, I'm not letting that fire get on before me. Get in there even faster. Oh, you may be a fire, but I've got to be at a job I hate in 10 minutes.
Operation London Bridge it's the plan for what happens when the Queen dies. And there's a variant of that plan called Operation Unicorn.
Sorry, is there like a maverick A-team-like band of separatists who want to commemorate the Queen in a different way to everyone else?
Kind of, because that's what happens if she dies in Scotland, which she did.
Right.
And unicorn is obviously the national animal of Scotland.
Obviously.
Again, these things I've said with a complete straight face to people. some of those people have been American. They've glanced among themselves and edged out of the room.
Yeah.
I was stating pure fact.
It's simply Operation Unicorn. I saw Americans sharing the news, a Daily Mail, I think it was, headline that said that the Queen's beekeeper had informed the bees of the Queen's death.
Good. I'm glad someone told them.
You and me, listeners to this podcast, are like, yep, reasonable behavior. That's the least surprising thing so far. The Queen's beekeeper has done his duty. Americans are like, this has gone too far. Great Britain with its wacky traditions. It's like, no, it's not. You don't understand. They're not just telling the bees that the Queen has died. We tell them everything.
You can't not tell the bees.
What, are you going to try and keep it from the bees? How are you going to manage that?
Especially not regarding a queen.
One of their special areas of interest, yes.
Yeah.
So, in this most respectful of times, what is today's episode about, James?
Oliver Cromwell.
Yes! I was going to refer to him as a problematic fave, but he's too problematic.
He is to be anyone's fave. Yes.
He's the worst guy.
Yes, he is.
I mean, I'm a Republican, small r Republican, but oh, he doesn't make it easy, does he? Ollie Crumbs.
I want to set the scene for this one.
Set it.
We're in London.
Ooh.
Holborn, Red Lion Square. And a bit of text comes up on the screen saying present day / 1970s or 80s.
I'm sorry?
Well, all the books I've researched this from are like from the 1970s or 80s, so...
Right. All right, well, okay. That's, first of all, I just want to say that's really confusing.
Yeah.
Now, carry on.
Okay.
Also, I think it's pronounced Holborn, but carry on. Set the scene.
We're in Red Lion Square, Holborn. Blah, 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 thing on the screen, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, present day.
Three shadowy, hooded ghosts walk across the square, and they fade away, and we sort of fade out to black, and then fade back up. We're still in Red Lion Square. There's three bodies laid out on some trestle tables or something. I haven't really thought that through.
Trestle tables?
Yeah, maybe.
Like a school fete?
Yeah, but they're dead bodies.
They're dead bodies. Is there any of that really weak orange juice?
Probably not at this stage.
Okay. Okay, a splatter rat?
Definitely, but not as it's not a sport. That's just like normal life.
That was what happened in those days.
Yeah, because a sign comes up on the screen saying, 30th of January, 1661.
Slash the past.
Yes. And it pans over the bodies and the name, more right in on the screen, Judge John Bradshaw, died Halloween 1659. And the next one, Henry Ireton, the general, died of disease outside Limerick, 1651. And then it comes to the third body, Oliver Cromwell, Lord Protector, died 3rd of September, 1658. And more writing on the screen.
A lot of writing.
These men are to be executed. Record scratch. The film sort of rewinds.
Mm.
It turns out it's quite a tacky, cheap film. It seemed like it had a bit of dignity about it, but it was actually quite cheesy.
I think the amount of text on screen already told me that something was a bit off.
Oh, a book can have all the text in it at once, but once the film does, But I suppose if a book has lots of pictures in it, that sort of devalues it.
I like a thick bit in the middle of the book with all glossy photos.
Yeah. When you're reading a film novelization, that's where the book naturally falls open.
No, the book of the film. I hate the book of the film. I know I've mentioned this on the podcast before. Nothing I hate more than the book of the film. Are you telling me that these three dead bodies are about to be executed?
Yes, I am. And how did we get to this situation? Well, allow me to explain. Flashback. We're in Huntingdonshire, the clumsily named county that's potentially not a county, but we'll go with it because that's what they call it in Lore of the Land.
Okay.
We're at Hinchingbrook House. Text on the screen.
Okay.
Oliver Cromwell's house.
Right.
Between you and me, technically, it's his uncle, Sir Oliver Cromwell. It's the same name.
Right. So it's a different Oliver Cromwell to the one we know.
Yes, but that Oliver Cromwell is actually there because we're in about 1600 and he was born in about 1599, in 1599 on a specific day.
Was he? He decided to be born on a specific day, did he?
The 25th of April, 1599. We're around 1600. Basically, it's Oliver Cromwell as a baby. We hear baby cries and a mix of the sound of something else and a bit of sort of scrabbling and scratching noises. And then people are running outside the house and a woman's going, my baby, my baby. And they're all looking at the roof of the house and we pan up to reveal a little baby Oliver Cromwell giggling and that.
Yeah.
On the roof.
What?
Playing with an actual monkey.
I wasn't ready for it. Didn't expect it.
Baby Oliver Cromwell was kidnapped by a monkey.
Baby Oliver Cromwell was kidnapped by a monkey.
Yep. His uncle's monkey, his uncle's pet monkey. His uncle's monkey.
He was kidnapped by his uncle's monkey.
Yes. Oliver Cromwell was kidnapped by his uncle's monkey.
I'm sorry. Carry on, of course.
The baby was taken out of the crib and apparently taken up on the roof and everyone gathered round. Put like mattresses down and was all terrified. And then the monkey just sort of brought him down kindly. Right. Now we jump forward to around 1603. We're still at Hinchingbrook House and King James the First, or as they would have called him, King James.
King James the First of England.
Of England specifically. Yes. Right. Or as they would have called him, King James of England, stops off at Hinchingbrook on his way from Edinburgh to London for his ascension to the British throne, which we all know quite a lot about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the four-year-old Cromwell gets into a fight with King James's three-year-old son and bloodies his nose. Yes, that three-year-old son is the future King Charles I, or King Charles.
He punched King Charles I in the nose as a baby.
As a baby. Yes, it's a spin-off, Civil War Babies.
Which side did the monkey take in this?
I think the monkey had been euthanized at this point.
What?
Probably for stealing babies. Once they get a taste for stealing babies.
In the same way, once you get a taste for punching kings.
Yeah. To be fair, the truth about King Charles, he was a very sickly child who was unable to walk until he was 7 because of his bad ankles. And he was very slow to develop speech. So basically, this 4-year-old is just beating up a small child that's probably in a pram.
Oh, I thought it was quite cool to begin with, but now you've provided context, it seems almost like bullying.
Yeah, it's a bit bullying if it ever happened.
I mean, it obviously didn't happen, did it? But carry on. So, James, who is Oliver Cromwell?
Well, if you didn't know already, this particular Oliver Cromwell that we're talking about led the Roundheads in the English Civil War, who defeated the king, ultimately committing regicide, which is to kill a monarch.
Called Reg.
He became the ruler of Britain. I think he was called His Majesty. He was definitely the Lord Protectorate.
When I was in school, in the last year of school, there were a variety of things people voted on, and I was voted King of Comedy.
Oh.
But because I was a Republican, small r, I insisted on the title Lord Protectorate of Comedy. Honestly, at that point, I think they thought about taking it back, because that was really very much a joke for me.
He was called His Highness. When he was the ruler.
Oh, yeah, totally different to a king.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was incredibly religious as well and thought he was doing God's duty, which, again, totally different to the royal family.
Yeah, he's famous for banning dancing and Christmas and committing genocide against Irish people.
Yes. I don't want to be all whataboutery, but sadly he's not the only famous English person that's tried to commit a genocide against Irish people.
Yeah.
But he certainly did. It was part of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms, which was kind of an ongoing mess between England, Scotland, and Ireland. It was really horrible. Oliver Cromwell did a tactic of basically starving people, which is...
Again, not the last time that we deliberately starved people in a colony.
Yeah. Some people sort of argue that he only killed soldiers. But by his own words, he said he killed like a thousand number of soldiers and others.
The one thing uniting staunch English royalists and Irish republicans is a dislike of Oliver Cromwell.
Yeah.
He was a prankster, though.
Yeah?
Not to redeem him, but he loved a prank.
What sort of pranks?
I remember being told this in school.
Yeah.
One of his famed pranks happened during the signing of the death warrant. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he and one of the other guys just sort of messed around with the ink and got ink all over each other and signed each other's faces and stuff, they say. That's an example of one of his pranks. And I thought, that doesn't really sound like a prank. The Los Angeles Herald in 1921 gives a lengthy account of one of his pranks. Well, it describes this as an example of practical joking and witty playfulness. You judge. A man called Jerry White was his chaplain, and he was apparently very, very, very good looking. Cromwell's daughter quite fancied him, and he quite fancied Cromwell's daughter. Now, supposedly, Cromwell burst in on them once while White was on his knees kissing daughter Cromwell's hand, and he, quote, roared his displeasure. What is the meaning of this posture before my daughter? Jerry White thought quickly and said, I was thinking of asking your maid out. And was asking your daughter's advice, basically, asking your daughter to sort of intercede on my behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cromwell, as an hilarious jape, said, oh, if you want to marry my maid so much, I'm going to force you to marry my maid. And then the guy had to marry his maid. And they lived together for 50 years. Just a joke.
It's just a bit of a joke.
Just a 50-year-long joke at the expense of someone else. That's like one of Joseph Stalin's funny jokes.
Yes, yeah. I think
he gave them 500 quid.
I'm just kidding. Stuffed it in his pocket.
Oliver Cromwell, you're so funny. How funny? Like I amuse you?
Yeah. Like a court jester?
That is not a joke. That's not really a joke. It's just a horrible forced marriage.
Yeah.
So that was the best I could find as an example of one of his quote-unquote practical jokes and witty banter.
It's definitely a slow burner.
50 years later, he's like, do you get it?
Right?
No, he's not, because he was dead by then. He was double dead, by the sounds of it.
Speaking of unfunny things to do with Oliver Cromwell, in Folklore, Myths and Legends of Britain, Reader's Digest, there is a reprint, because this period of Oliver Cromwell was the beginning of the satirical cartoon.
Oh, no, not satirical cartoons where everyone's got something written on their bum.
Yes.
And a flag, holding a flag that says liberty. Oh, they're awful.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are not funny.
The satirical cartoon.
There's a very early one. They got the idea from Holland. And as it says here, though these seem labored to modernize, they were highly effective at the time. And the picture is basically, it's got Oliver Cromwell on the left. Everything's covered in like Bible quotes. He's pointing at a big oak tree,
yeah,
which is helpfully labeled the Royal Oak of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And it has in it like the king's crown and scepter, in case you didn't realize that was meant to be the king. And also hanging off it are like signs that say the Magna Carta, being king. And then there's some people in sort of army uniforms chopping it down with axes. And then underneath it are some pigs, which are meant to represent the common man. And it says fatted for slaughter next to them.
Oh.
And the parliament people are pulling down the tree as well. So it's...
Wow, no, those rascals, some parliamentarians.
Really zinged us there, haven't they?
Curse those roundheads.
So, look, Oliver Cromwell, unsurprisingly, for being a massively important historical person in this country, has also become a massive part of the folklore. There are loads of legends, aside from the old monkey stealing that we've already mentioned.
Monkey stealing and baby punching aside.
There's loads of legends. It's not helped by the fact that there was another Cromwell that instigated massive change in this country.
Tommy Cromms.
Tommy Cromms, who's actually Ollie Cromms' great-great-great uncle.
Really? They were related?
Yes.
I didn't know that. So this is a man for all seasons, Thomas Cromwell.
Yes. And Ollie Cromwell's a man for all seasons too.
The seasoning.
Sounds delicious. Because, yeah, Tommy Cromm was a sort of a lackey sidekick to Henry VIII, who set himself up as the head of his own religion, basically. It was Christianity, but it was his own version of it, where he was the head of it. And Tommy Cromm helped in that by getting rid of, politely saying, lots of Catholic people and monasteries and churches, destroying those.
Yeah. Mm.
Something that Ollie Cromm kind of did as well.
Mm.
So there's loads of mythology about, you know, an old ruined church. Who did that? Cromwell.
It's, I see,
become lost in time which Cromwell they're talking about. There's loads of legends that wherever Oliver Cromwell hitched his horse for the night, he'd kick a church down as well. Yeah. What a prankster. I mean, there's some that just simply couldn't have happened. For example, quite a big one that a lot of people believed is that there was a town called Swansdown, which was larger than London, on the outskirts of London, that was blown away by Cromwell's guns. This town never existed.
No.
But I think it's one of these jokes, because it's called Swansdown. Who owns the swans?
The king/queen.
The king/queen. So I think that someone tried a joke, it didn't work, so they just doubled down and pretended it was true.
Yeah.
Speaking of jokes that have ended up kind of becoming true, have we got time to have a little Paddington segue?
Yeah, all right.
At the moment, people are being told not to leave effigies of Paddington Bear outside the royal palaces.
With marmalade sandwiches.
Yes.
Attached. Some of them in handy little sandwich bags, as if King Charles is going to eat them.
As far as I can tell, there's not really a connection between Paddington Bear and the Queen, apart from she did a sketch with an animated bear earlier this year.
Yes.
That was a lighthearted joke, which has now got out of hand.
Have you seen the guy on the news saying there wasn't a real Paddington in the room when they filmed it? It was CGI. They didn't even get the real Paddington. He won't come out of his trailer for the Queen. Well,
but they didn't even get a real Paddington.
They didn't even get a real
which
Paddington.
Which implies there's multiple Paddington. Not only is it real, there's an army.
There's your new model army. All lined up, giving you a hard stare.
What if that bear, in revenge, got human skin hats? Because if you don't know, the royal soldiers have bear skin hats. But the thing is, if she'd have died 10 years ago, it would have been like little Jimmy Bond figurines, because she did that sketch with James Bond before the Olympics.
Yeah.
So it'd just be like loads of Walther PPKs being left outside. And martinis. I think I'd rather that.
Yeah, yeah.
given the choice.
A bit more of a toast. There you go, Your Majesty. Martini. Rather than a marmalade sandwich. What are you going to do with that?
Going back to your boy OC, Oliver Cromwell. The legends of Oliver Cromwell did not end with his death.
Surely they must have.
The fun story of Oliver Cromwell did not end with his death on the 3rd of September, 1658. Incidentally, that is the 7-year anniversary of the Battle of Worcester, which was a big turning point in the Civil War. And the fact that he died 7 years later to the day made some people think that he had sold his soul to the devil to win that battle. And then the devil came back 7 years later to claim it, because that is a classic devil number.
A big battle to gain control of the sauce. It's like Dune, but with Worcester sauce instead of spice. The sauce must flow.
This really is the Man Four Seasons 2, the seasoning.
It's more of a condiment, but you can't, yeah.
It works
where you were going.
Well
it worked. It worked well enough.
Is this, what is a season? Is just salt and pepper seasonings?
Salt and pepper, yeah.
That's it. That's all your seasonings.
There may be other seasonings.
Where does con-
I think we might have just recorded the whitest the whitest episode of the whitest podcast ever, where we go, are there other seasonings apart from salt
but
and
what
pepper?
What differentiates a seasoning from a condiment?
Wet and dry, I think.
So a condiment is wet?
I think so, yeah. So you're talking your brown sauces, your tartar sauces, your mustard.
Your pepper sauces.
Never heard of that.
Your salsa verdes.
Presumably, yes. On the other hand, seasoning.
Dry.
Salt and pepper. Just dry. Salt and pepper.
What there about a little others. Pinch of oregano?
What?
Or oregano.
That's just herb. That should go in while you're cooking, surely.
You might pop a little punch of that on at the end on your Greek salad, or as they call it in Greece, a Greek salad. Well, we'll leave that there. If anyone has any answers, let us know what is the difference, the sliding scale from seasoning to condiment to sauce.
You think it's a spectrum?
I think so.
Oh, brave new world that has such flavors in it. Well, if anybody knows of a third seasoning, get in touch.
Whoa.
Let me know.
Blow our minds. MSG. Yeah, we've got a lovely seasoning, which we got from Japan, which is a mix of salt, pepper, and MSG. Yum, 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 yum. Really, really makes everything delicious. Everything savory, delicious, rubbish on ice cream.
People put salt in chocolate and ice cream now.
People put pepper on strawberries and salt in coffee, but...
Do they?
Come on, you're not Heston Blumenthal. So, yes, to Cromwell, the eagle-eared... And eagle mind's eyed of you will remember from the beginning the imaginary film I made, which now has been called Man Four Seasons 2, The Seasoning.
Yeah.
It told you that those three ghosts had died in 1659, 1651, and 1658, but were going to be executed on the 30th of January, 1661.
Make it make sense, James.
Well, what happened was English Civil War. Cromwell and the Roundheads won. Cromwell, a.k.a. Ironsides, and the Roundheads won.
You've just brought the nickname Ironsides in at this point.
Oh, yeah, that was one of his nicknames.
Okay.
Also, as I've learned the other day, the English Hercules.
These sound a little bit like nicknames he came up with that didn't really catch on.
Yeah. Although he was famous that he wanted his portrait to be warts and all, because he had some big warts on his face.
Yes.
And they're in all the pictures. Maybe, again... That's him trying to take ownership of the situation when he was just playing pranks on the artist. So they decided to draw unflattering pictures of him.
Yeah, constant pranks forcing them to get married. Prank.
Ever so funny, that. It's like the bucket of water above the door.
Yeah.
But for 50 years.
Yes. It's like taking a little slice of Wrigley's chewing gum, but it snaps on your finger.
For 50 years.
50 years of that.
I wonder if he had a hand buzzer and, like, when he became the ruler, he made people kiss it and, they got an electric shock in their face.
At the end of the 50-year marriage, he's dressed as a policeman with a fake beard. And he takes it off. It's like, oh, Oliver Cromwell. And he's like, ha-ha, it was a prank. But, oh, that didn't happen because he was killed.
Well, no, he died of probably malaria, or he had kidney stone disease. He might have had blood poisoning. That's probably what killed him in the end. And after that, because they wanted to get rid of the monarchy, after the Lord Protectorate died, obviously power went to his son.
Oliver Cromwell Jr.
you had one job.
Come on.
Not that many people liked this in the first place.
Yeah, and I wonder why.
The whole thing fell apart not long afterwards, and Charles II was reinstated as the king. And
Charles II, legend of curly's gold, because he had curly hair. So it works.
Ever so curly.
He had some gold as well.
Oh, big time. They obviously wanted revenge on the people. He wanted revenge on the people that had killed his dad.
Mm.
But those people were dead. So they did a posthumous execution. They disinterred the bodies from Westminster Abbey. They took them to the Red Lion Inn, and then they were taken down to Tyburn Tree. Do you know much about Tyburn Tree?
That is the gallows.
There's a famous gallows in the area of London called Tyburn, which is now where Marble Arch is. And that's where Tyburn was. From 1196 to 1783, thousands of people were executed at Tyburn. And then their bodies were beheaded and their heads were...
debodied.
Their heads were put on spikes above Westminster Hall, which is the central and oldest part of Westminster where government is now. So they popped their heads on spikes kind of as a warning to people to be like, even if you die, we're still going to mess with you.
Yeah.
If you mess with the crown.
Mm. Luckily, things have calmed down a lot since then.
Oh, absolutely. The poles were 20 feet long and they were put on the roof of Westminster Hall. His head remained up there for 23 years.
Ooh.
Till 1684, when it was apparently blown off in a big storm and just taken home by a sentry.
So do we still have Oliver Cromwell's head?
Well,
I mean, it must have been skull by this point.
In Friend of the Show, Folklore, Myths and Legends of Britain, there is actually a photograph of it because it wasn't buried until 1960. And there's a little story about what happened to Oliver Cromwell's head.
Flash forward to the swinging 60s. Oliver Cromwell is a skull.
After the century picked it up off the ground in 1684, it was passed around collectors and sold to a rumoured relative called Samuel Russell in the late 18th century. He's described as a failed comic actor and drunkard. He used to pass it around at parties.
Oliver Cromwell would have hated that.
That's the last thing that he liked, fun.
Don't take me to a party unless there's going to be a prank.
I suppose he was the prank in a way.
Yeah, I guess being a skull at a party is kind of classic Cromwell, ruining everyone's fun.
Until a chap called James Cox, who is described as a goldsmith, clockmaker, and toy man.
Okay.
I'm guessing that means he makes toys rather than he is some sort of animated doll.
Just a big articulated teddy bear.
One of the army of Paddingtons. Now, he wanted to buy it, but Russell didn't want to sell it. Even though Russell didn't have much money, he saw it as a kind of a connection to a glorious past. So Cox came up with a cunning plan. He started lending Russell little bits of money until the amount of debt he'd accrued was about £100. Cox recalled the money. Russell couldn't pay. So Cox was like, well, I'll have the head then. So in 1787, it went over to Cox. Now, he kept hold of it for 12 years until 1799 when he flipped it for £230 to the Hughes Bros. And they wanted to display it, but people thought it was a fake. And also that their tickets were too expensive. No one was interested in seeing Cromwell's head. Although one of the Hughes Bros' daughters would show it to anyone who wanted to see it for free, I'm guessing.
Oh, right.
So it's very, very undermining the family business. In 1813, even the famous naturalist antiquarian called Billy Bullock, he thought about buying it, but just thought that people didn't really want to go see real dead bodies.
Yeah, it's surprisingly tasteful.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was showing off mummies and stuff, though, which are also dead bodies.
Mm, okay. So he means they don't want to see dead bodies of English people, right?
I'm guessing. In 1815, it was sold to Josiah Wilkinson, and he apparently flashed it at the novelist Maria Edgeworth. Flashed it to her over breakfast in 1822. And it was around this time that another skull turned up at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford. And so there were two skulls now that claimed to be Oliver Cromwell's.
Okay.
like Highlander, there can be only one.
So what do they do? Like Conkers, smash the two skulls into each other, see which one survives.
And whichever skull remains is like, oh, that's a kinger. Yeah. The number transfers over, doesn't it? So the Ashmolean skull was found to be a fake in 1911, and our skull that we've been chatting about was found to be real.
By fake, do you mean it was not Oliver Cromwell, or do you mean it was not a real skull?
I think that it was not Oliver Cromwell, rather than just an elaborate papier-mâché, because you'd probably be able to tell by the heft.
Nah.
But it meant that our skull was real. It was later buried at Sydney Sussex It was buried at Sydney Sussex College in Cambridge in 1960.
Sydney Sussex College?
Sydney Sussex College. I'd rather have a sausage from Sydney Sussex College than look for Oliver Cromwell's head. It's an unmarked grave. It's buried. No one knows exactly where it was buried, but there is a little plaque saying Oliver Cromwell's head somewhere around. Prize if you find it, I guess.
Somewhere round.
It's somewhat round.
Oh, you did a very good roundhead joke there.
So that's what happened. I mean, and so his body is probably buried at Tyburn because that's where they traditionally were. There are some legends that when he was being interred at the Red Lion Inn, his body was swapped for a lookalike, a very unfortunate lookalike.
A lookalike corpse. Who happened to
but
die?
They're 3 years interned. You got some wiggle room on the lookalikiness.
I think, yeah, but it's a disgusting proposition. I think we need to find a ringer for dead Cromwell. Let's just start digging up other bodies until we find one that's roughly the same. What a horrible afternoon.
Or you go around town and you find someone that looks like him and then...
Yeah, but even then he's not going to be sufficiently decayed. You'd have to plan ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You can't Birkenhair your way out of this situation.
Another situation I can't Birkenhair my way out of.
Yeah.
Those are the tales of Oliver Cromwell.
Disgusting tales of a horrible man. Thank you.
Alistair, are you ready to score me?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
I'm ready to pass judgment on you and Oliver Cromwell and to remain respectfully quiet about the institution of the monarchy.
Okay, category the first, naming.
Names. Well, there were a lot of Oliver Cromwells.
We've got three Oliver Cromwells minimum.
Yeah, that's too many. I count that negatively.
Wait a minute. Samuel Russell, that's not great, but James Cox is good.
All right, yeah.
Billy Bullock's good.
I forgot about Billy Bullock.
Tommy Croms,
okay.
Judge John Bradshaw.
Hmm. I mean, these are names.
These are all names.
It's 2 out of 5.
That's not even as many Oliver Cromwells that featured in the story.
It's the same number as there are seasonings.
I've Googled seasonings, yeah. And the wiki page
It's a stub. It's only got 2 in it, yeah?
No. Seasonings include herbs and spices.
What?
Which are themselves frequently referred to as seasonings.
So all herbs and all spices are seasonings?
I don't know. However, La Russe Gastronomique.
Is that a person?
Which I'm guessing is a book or a very, very well-named person, states that to season and to flavor are not the same thing.
Is that the whole quote? That doesn't help at all. I'm even more confused.
Insisting that seasoning includes a large or small amount of salt being added into a preparation.
So that says that salt has to be part of it for it to be seasoning.
That's what La Russe Gastronomique says.
Well, if La Russe Gastronomique, a thing I have just heard of, says it, that's a good enough for me.
Yeah. Who may be a person or a book.
Could be a person, could be a book.
Oh, now this is a person who has a perfect name for this to weigh in on this opinion. Auguste Escoffier.
Because he scoffs.
Yeah. He does break down the difference between a seasoning and a condiment.
Yeah.
He says there's saline seasonings, which are salt, spiced salt, and saltpeter.
Hold on. The saltpeter is potassium nitrate. That's explosive. Can you eat that?
Don't know. Auguste Escoffier probably eats anything.
All right.
There's acid seasonings, which is vinegar, and orange juices, lemon juices.
Oh, so the dry liquid thing is not real?
No, I don't think so.
So vinegar is a seasoning. Okay.
There's hot seasonings, your peppercorns, your paprika, your curry, your cayenne, and other mixed pepper spices, and your spice seasonings, which is made by using essential oils.
What? How are the ones with spices in not spice seasonings?
I don't know. You got to take it out with Auguste Escoffier.
Well.
Who died in 1935.
All right, I will. I'll dig him up. You've convinced me that there are more than 2 types of seasoning, so I've learned something. And you've learned that it's 2 out of 5 for names, because that did not pertain to this category.
Okay. Category the second, supernatural. Right.
Well, punching a baby is not supernatural.
It ain't natural.
It's not natural, but it isn't supernatural.
That's great. Yeah.
Being kidnapped by a monkey, also not supernatural.
Yeah, all right.
Having your head chopped off after death, horrible, but not supernatural. Coming back once as a ghost, supernatural.
What about destroying a town that didn't exist?
A lie. That's more of a lie than it is supernatural.
What about an army of Paddingtons?
Terrifying. Absolutely horrifying. Yeah, so, okay, you've got your army of Paddingtons and you've got your three hooded ghosts. What else have you got? This is a good story, but you're not scoring very highly in the classic cats. I'm afraid it's a 3 out of 5. What's category 3?
Bad jokes.
Oh, there were a lot of those. Even more than usual in the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there were some bad, bad jokes. Oh, every single political cartoon is terrible.
Yep.
Throughout all of history.
Yep. Whether or not they're making a good point, they're still not funny.
Doesn't matter if the point's good. They're all, yes, very good.
To be honest, the better the point, the less funny it is.
Absolutely. Nobody's ever read a Steve Bell cartoon of The Guardian and thought, hilarious.
Or, I understand that.
It's just three grotesque images. And then you go, well, that was that.
I think that must be something to do with the news. Someone's dressed as a baby.
Yeah, they're all terrible.
We've got those. We've got Oliver Cromwell's pranks.
Awful. They're not even pranks so much as just the bullying of a tyrant.
Yeah. You've got passing around a skull. What happened with his skull was evidently used for some sort of prankage.
Yeah, whapping a skull out at brunch. That's bad behaviour. That's not funny.
It is not funny. The Paddington that got out of hand.
Yeah, yeah, that little sketch, the little Paddington sketch, and now people airdropping marmalade sandwiches all over Buckingham Palace.
Mm.
Yeah, 5 out of 5.
Yes.
For bad jokes. Yes. Not a good joke in it.
I've thought of a better name for that last category. Can I change the name of the last category?
Yes.
Posthumorous.
Posthumorous. Damn, I'm afraid I'm going to have to knock it down to a 4 because that's quite good.
That's a good joke. Okay.
It's quite a good joke. So that's a 4 out of 5 for posthumorous.
Okay, final category, hail seasoning.
Oh, that's quite good. So you're lucky you did this after the previous category because I enjoyed that. Well, you know, I want to give this 2 out of 5, but August Snack, or whatever his name is.
He'd list there being 4 seasonings, to be fair.
Neil Sandwich. I can't remember his name.
August Escoffier.
August Escoffier.
Jimmy Munch.
He says it's 4. It's got to be 4. And it's just sad that he died getting stuck in that tube full of chocolate in that factory. I just think that's a shame because he had so much left to give.
Okay, well, I hope this episode has helped people in these difficult, sad times.
Yeah, I hope people have enjoyed the new respectful lawmen.
Mm, yes, exactly.
I hope our reverent humour has been enjoyable.
I mean, there's quite a lot of stuff I've glossed over in there.
Yep.
So if you want to support this, you can do so at patreon.com/lawmenpod. And you'll also get things, bonus episodes, a sticker, access to the Discord. It is jumping off in the Discord right now. I've just had to create a new chat just for knitting.
Yeah, if you give us money, you get something in return, which is what separates this podcast from the monarchy. Oh no! I mean, God made it through the whole podcast! I wonder if the listeners will be able to tell this was a cursed episode.
Yeah.
We were interrupted about 14 times during the recording of this.
And twice was just computers going wrong by themselves.
Yes.
Then they're onto us.
Is Lizzie's curse?
They found me. I don't know how, but they found me.
Knock on your door. You open it. It's just a marmalade sandwich.
Ta-da.
I made it through the whole podcast without being irreverent. And it slipped out right at the last second.
They did give something back.
Well, tell me when it's the money.